While we try to keep these weekly recordings to 7 to 8 minutes, some topics are important enough to require more time. This discussion of harvest aids was recorded on September 16th, 2020.
This is Blaine Reed, IPM agent in Hell Switcher County, and we're here together with Kerry Siders. We're going to be talking a little bit about harvest aids and a little bit of a different type of podcast this week as we look at coming into the winter months. So, yeah, we've got a lot of cotton across the entire region that's probably getting pretty close to some harvest aids real soon. And Kerry and I wanted to sit down and kind of have a quick discussion with everybody about, one, the science behind the art of the harvest aid art, and maybe a little bit of some things that we do in our territory. Kerry?
Yeah, Blaine. You know, one of the first things that we generally consider when we talk about cotton harvest aids is, you know, is the plant ready? And my first go-to tool, now there's two or three tools that I think we all should use, but the first one is using nodes above cracked bowl. And it's simply that. We go up the plant from the bottom and find that uppermost cracked bowl. Now, we say open bowl, but if we find an open bowl, let's say at node 10, and it's open, obviously, go to the first position right above it and try to mash it with your thumb and forefinger. If it cracks easily, then consider that your uppermost cracked bowl. And then you simply count the number of harvestable bowls above that on the first position. We're not counting second or thirds, just first position. So, and go up. I say harvestable bowls. There may be some bowls up there in the top that realistically will not contribute to yield or quality. So separate those out. So when we get to particularly four nodes above that cracked bowl, that's typically equivalent to that 60 to 70% open, really 60%, not until we get to about two nodes above cracked bowl are we equivalent then to about 80%. And then, of course, Blaine, you may want to discuss that we follow that nodes above cracked bowl up with, you know, the knife method and some other ways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you want to be careful when you're using that node, too, that you know exactly what a node is. And don't get distracted by a vegetative branch that's down low, lower on that and count from there. That can be really confusing if you're a novice at starting on some of these things. Be sure it's a true node. And, of course, we have two other methods of determining that. One is determining where that uppermost harvestable bowl is that Kerry talked about. And you really need to be realistic. In Hale County, our last average, so it can be earlier than this, last average bloom to set is about August 24th. With that being average, we probably shouldn't count on a September 5th, little bowl that's there as being harvestable. That's just not realistic. So we need to just set those guys aside as junk that we probably don't want in the stripper basket anyway, and find that uppermost harvestable bowl to do the uppermost sharp knife method. And I really like this real quick to determine if I'm even in the neighborhood. Throw this together with the note above crack bowl, and you're getting pretty close to determining if the field is ready. And we rate the bowls on a 1 to 3 scale. And without visuals, it's a little hard to see. But, you know, if we slice a bowl maturity 1, it slices through that bowl. And you're not doing halfway, just a little above halfway, maybe between halfway and 2/3 to the tip of that bowl, and slice through with a sharp knife. And maturity 1 will just slice real easy. And the inside of those seeds, once you look inside there, will look like a boiled egg with, you know, just nothing but just some liquid syrupy stuff inside the center of that seed. Now, by the time you get to maturity 2, you start to see the cotyledons inside that seed take shape. Everything that it makes to make that plant for the next generation is developing inside that seed, and most of that gumminess is gone, and it's firmed up. By the time you get to a 3, that bowl is really hard to cut, and you'll probably be pulling some cotton through on the tip of your knife if you slide too far. And when you have to pop and pry this more mature bowl back, and you look, you'll see that inside is fully formed just like the 2, except now you've got a thick brown, almost blackish brown seed coat that's developed. And, Kerry, I like when we're slicing with that method to to give it a decimal point. When things average a 2.4 bowl maturity, it should be ready for harvest age. Just on that gooey center, if you have a little bit of things, 10% of it filling in and 90% goo, I would call that a 1.1. But if it's almost all developed with the cotyledons and the taproot and everything inside there, almost developed with just a little bit of goo, you might give that a 1.9. Of course, our third method would just be 60% open bowls. And this is a pretty simple way. It's also a great way to get a yield estimate. I like to measure off 10 foot in a field and count the total number of bowls. And then you've got the number of cracked and open bowls. When that gets to be 60%, when you hit any one of these three standards, you're there. And of course, the yield estimate just comes back to the old 10 bowls per row foot on 40 inch rows should be a bale. And on the modern varieties, that's usually a little light. We'll usually underestimate a little bit, and you can adjust for row spacings, but it's a pretty good way to see what you got out there before you actually spend money on the harvest aid. So when you reach any one of these three, and typically they usually occur about the same time, you're ready for harvest aids.
Yeah. So Blaine, just to back up to one point you made about that last effective bloom date, you know, whether it's the 20th or the 25th of August, really that bowl needs a good solid 40 days. So that puts us really at the end of September. If we're counting on those last bowls that were set there at the third week of August, we still have a couple more weeks yet for some of them to completely mature, giving that we have good weather conditions and we don't have a few days like we did last week where we have, you know, zero heat units. But I really feel like here in the next couple of weeks that as much as this cotton's progressed during the summer, that it should be very mature. And in fact, some of this cotton that got a little hot, maybe didn't have the water resources, we're already seeing here the 16th through the 20th of September going to see some harvest aid applications going out. Probably not necessarily much in the way of bowl openers because those hot fields probably pop pretty quickly. But usually when we take that next step of saying, okay, this cotton is mature enough, we've hit, whether it's four nodes above crack bowl, we've got a sufficient amount of seed coat formed on that, somewhere on that scale of 2 to 3. And then our, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times on that percent estimate, it's very subjective, not qualitative like Blaine. That's the best way to do it, to literally count bowls that's open and that's not. And when you get that percentage over 60, and that's been the old standard for, you know, seed quality for years, is that 60+%. But when we get to that point, then we need to decide, okay, what chemical do we need to use? Does it justify a bowl opener? And most of this irrigated crop, which is really all we have, I mean, there's a smattering of dry land, and then, of course, then some very semi-irrigated fields. But on our, hopefully it's better cotton, you know, we're going to be looking at, you know, first chemical in line is going to be a bowl opener. And Blaine, I think, you know, we talked about this earlier. Typically, we're in that, since the price of Ethifon products have gone down the past few years, I think our minimum is we generally start about at a quart, and it can go up to 2 quarts.
Yeah, and we've been doing that up here, you know, north of Plainview and Plainview area for quite some time. You know, starting at the 32 ounces per acre, and you know, for a lot of years now, for a lot of guys up here, that's kind of been the standard. And then because it's gotten so economical, so cheaper with that generic Ethifon, the prep, so to speak, that, you know, we bumped that way on up to, you know, 42, 46 ounces in a few places. And, you know, it works pretty good when you get that high. Of course, you're getting that bowl opening that's just maturing that fruit. This is the same product they spray on green tomatoes to turn them red when they harvest them green and ship them across the country. It's the same synthetic hormone, but when you get that really high rate, you can blow a lot of leaves off.
And it synergizes, you know, well with a lot of our defoliants too. I mean, there's a lot of, you get over 32 ounces, amazing things happen with Ethifon. I will say this, you know, when you get to that two nodes, we mentioned two nodes above crack bowl being very mature. Most of the time when you look at a two node above crack bowl plant, it probably doesn't need Ethaphon to finish it out over the course of the next 2 weeks. Unfortunately, though, we know that our cotton fields are not that uniform. We can have a majority of it be, you know, at two nodes above cracked bowl, but inevitably, we, because of topography of the field, we get water standing in certain places, whatever it might be, we still have that edge effect and all these things where we still have a lot of cotton that can contribute to yield and quality, that we may need to use an Ethafon product to help even that field out so that it's all now on the same page, so that then we address the next product, which would be a defoliant.
Yes, absolutely. And I probably would say south of Lubbock and west of Lubbock is going to use these more regular than we do. When we use some every year, we'll have those fields that are just, you know, too much green leaf hanging on, you know, a lot of leaves that you need to knock down. And these do a pretty good job of just forming a abscission layer and dropping the leaf off. And, you know, the higher rates would of course work better, but that's generally what a defoliant does. But, you know, we've been running such high rates of that Ethafon and blowing a lot of that off. We've gone to that probably more using of the third category that we're about to talk about, Kerry.
Right. And you know, we've had such good luck here with, you know, all the PPOs, whether it's AIM or ET, ETX, Sharpen, all these products. I think you really got to pay attention on your PPOs of what you're mixing it with in terms of what it requires, whether it's an oil or mentholated oil. Really pay attention to that. And we, of course, our guide, our Extension Harvest Aid Guide, helps address that. But pay attention to the label on those things. But, you know, yes, Ethafon mixes well. It does a lot of amazing things. But, you know, when we get beyond maybe, of course, there's a lot of other defoliants on the market, and I would encourage you to consider those.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
You know, when we talk about probably one of the most versatile harvest aids of it is Paraquat. You know, and there's several out there on the market, and we have many that will use Paraquat at low rates to kind of condition the plant and really even kind of simulate like what a light freeze, and that in itself can cause just a slight amount of injury to that bowl, which will cause it to go ahead and pop open too. So Paraquat can be used somewhat as a bowl opener. It's not an Ethafon product. Don't get me wrong. And then also at certain rates, when we talk about, well, a 2 pound type product of Paraquat, you know, medium rates in that, you know, 8 to 12 ounce range can also condition the leaf such that it can form an abscission zone. Maybe not as strong as a good defoliant, but Paraquat does that as well. And then we can jack those rates up above 20-24, particularly as we get it near the quart range. And I've seen some producers do this. We have some do it here. I know as you get further east in the district over around Dagan Teague's area, they've done this for years where they'll just go in there and smoke with high rates of Paraquat, burn those leaves. Yes, initially it sticks them, but inevitably with our winds, it removes a lot of that leaf trash. But I would sure want to visit with my ginner to make sure that he can take any leaf out of that trash out of that cotton when you take it to the gin.
That's right. You know, Karen, you mentioned with using Paraquat, and we did a lot of research trials with managed maturity with AIM, you know, not too many years ago with the same thing. I caution folks not to do this on every field, though. If it's going to be ready before a frost, we're not losing anything. I'm really put this managed maturity for us on fields that are going to overshoot the landing. I don't think we're going to have very much of that this year, but I've got a lot of phone calls from guys up north of Amarillo wanting to know about managed maturity with AIM or the Paraquat. And well, we're talking about using about an eighth of an ounce of AIM or equivalent of Paraquat. And we're talking about fields that might be regrowing, got a heavy rain, or for whatever reason, if it ever rains again, a decent rain across the area and cotton starts to regrow, or it's just outright missing the landing. And what you'll do is you'll just fry off that top crop, open up that canopy and let that sunlight down and let the last of the heat units actually fall on those leaves that'll be feeding that bowl, and let that energy go into developing a bowl instead of vegetative waste. And like I say, not every field needs that. And if it goes on a field that doesn't need a conditioning treatment, it could do more harm than good. We've seen it fry some bowls and then actually knock a few things off it had a chance of making. But all in all, that management surety is pretty good. And
I think that brings up a good point too, Blaine. I don't mean to cut you off here, but rarely are we going to see a one-shot deal. We've all seen it, but it rarely happens, and we just don't know always how that cotton's going to respond. So whether you start with a conditioning or, you know, go ahead and do a full-blown, you know, bowl opening and defoliation at one and hope for the best. But I think, again, back to the paraquat, that's what kind of evens the playing field. You can make some mistakes early as long as they're not too costly, and then get back in a good stead with, having good open cotton in by desiccating. That final shot, that would be called the desiccating shot, where it kills all the green material as much as possible. Now, if you're in a regrowth situation, that's a tough one to handle. And sometimes you may just have to let it roll through a freeze, but even then it doesn't always stop it. But a good hard shot of paraquat, one of those products to desiccate it. You may have to get out there very quickly and not give it time to kind of green back up. So that's kind of I think, Blaine, here in a few weeks, we'll follow this discussion up with some actual results that you and I and some others will have available to folks to kind of let them know. And again, back to your conditioning principle, I think is a good one. You know, some of this cotton that got injured last week from that cold snap, that may have opened up that canopy sufficiently to do exactly what you're talking about.
That's right. That's right. So that's not a home for every field on that for sure, but certainly useful if it needs it. The phone calls I was getting were guys were wanting to use it on every field that they had north of Amarillo, and I think that would be a mistake up that way. And, you know, Kerry, that's something else. We talked about a lot of territory here, and my guys might consider, you know, well, Blaine's way or Kerry's way. Well, we're in two different areas, and this whole subject is more art than science. And we talk about the science doesn't change from one place to another, but there's little nuances between the areas that we follow. And these are our opinions we're talking about. For instance, Kerry, this might be a good subject to finish things out on is, the majority of our fields, we will hit it with a pretty good shot early on. The first three or four fields guys intend to get these harvest aids on, hit them with a pretty good shot where we're mixing products with a strong rate of prep and come in with either those PPOs or a defoliant. And 17 to 20 days later, if we're not looking at a freeze, we'll come in with that killing shot of Gramoxone or a second PPO of some sort. But the majority of fields, we're probably just putting a decent rate of prep on and letting the freeze take the second shot. Well, if that's the case, with the freeze representing that second shot, as we stagger those fields and get them ready, what's the benefit of using the harvest aid anyway? Why not just let a freeze take it? And I think you and I both can talk about that and say, harvest just goes so much easier if you've got that prep out there. The quality, the generators love you a whole lot more, and those fields actually get ready for the stripper a lot faster, and you're not sawing through that field so late, and it makes for a lot better Thanksgiving. It makes for a lot better quality that didn't actually out there hang up in the weather and get torn up for such a long period of time. You got any thoughts on that one, Kerry?
Well, no doubt. I think that, harvest aids, the whole principle of harvest aids is it puts us in control of when we get started. And of course, we have situations all over the board. It's not always our better cotton. Sometimes it's our poor cotton that we just, you know, need to go ahead and get it out. We can get started early on that, but we go ahead and spray and spend the money on those better fields and know that, hey, that's our as close to a cash crop as we have, and let's spend the money to do it right and gather it. If we sit around like we used to, like Grandpa did, and wait for a freeze, and it's already at once, we can't stagger that harvest, and it it subjects you to a lot of degradation of cotton and all sorts of things, but you kind of left it all to Mother Nature, which is not always bad. We were in that situation a lot of fields last year, but I think it's better if we try to control some of this, and Harvest Aids allows us to do that, whether it's some hot cotton that just simply needs to be dried up so we can get through with it through a stripper. It's still worthy of putting a stripper in it, but yet we're spraying, you know, some of our better cotton that, you know, we know it's going to take time, but it's mature, it's ready, and we need to start making progress on that stuff. Yeah. I think we'll both have more to say here in the next, 10 days, 2 weeks, as we do get some results and see some things that farmers are doing and some of the tests that we're putting out. Fortunately, I guess there's not anything really new in the Harvest Aid world, so there's not going to be a whole lot to change. And one old adage that always applies here in Harvest Aids is you do get what you pay for, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You do get what you pay for. And I think, as always, folks, if they have any questions, they can sure give us a call at our county office. I'm in Hale County, and Kerry, you are?
I'm down in Hockley, Cochran, and Lamb counties. I'm in the Levelland office. So, yeah, don't hesitate to give us a call, and we'll try to share the information that we're receiving from day to day on how things are working.
Amen. Well, good luck out there, folks.
This has been a production of the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service Entomology Department here on the High Plains of Texas.